Hey everyone, this is Andy.
And this is Sam.
And we're the Spiteries. We started the Spiteries review series as a small Patreon side project, but it turns out that my wife is even better at podcasting than I am, so we're bringing the Spiteries review to the masses.
Starting this month, the Spiteries review will be available wherever you get your podcasts, so come and listen as Andy and I chat about the stuff we've watched and the things that we've done.
With brand new episodes every month, the Spiteries review is a peek into what life is like in the Spiteri household, and you never know when Link or Zora will make a surprise appearance.
We've even got older shows in the vault that will be rolled out over the next few months, including reviews on Mean Girls, Twilight, Spirited Away, Cowboy Bebop, and more. So make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Like they say, happy wife equals happy life.
Ugh, you're so lame.
So help us out by joining our Discord and subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. The Spiteries review is available now from SPNet. Here on ZeldaDungeon.net, my name is Andy Spiteri, joined by Allison, Aletha. What's going on, Al? How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm a little tired. I had a long day yesterday, but it was really enjoyable. I drove down to Portland and drove back, which is about 3 hours each way, and I went to see a concert, a Stardew Valley concert. It was so sweet. It was so fun. It made me so happy.
You know, I have to say, one of my favorite lo-fi tracks is, it's a Stardew Valley track, and it is, I'm gonna look up the name here, so stall for time for me, but it's from Coffee Date and Game Chops, and it's like the horseradish something.
Oh, I know what you're saying. Horseradish jam.
Yeah, the horseradish. Yeah. It just sounds so sweet. It's like this.
That's a spring song. So yeah. The concert was called, something of seasons, I can't quite remember, but it was based on like
Oracle.
The seasons. So each portion was based on like the seats, so spring, summer, fall, winter, and then there's like additional songs in there. It was very small, not as big as like, you know, Ballad of the Goddesses, but like small, very quaint. The creator was there. We live near his, like, or we were being performed to near his living, where he lives.
Yeah.
So he came down and came out. Aww. And nobody really actually sees him. Like, he's pretty introverted. He does this all by himself. So it was kind of a surprise to see him there. And he got a standing ovation. And, like, he just works really hard. So it was really actually super cool to see him and sweet. And
aww.
It was just such a fun time, a bunch of fans. It's like going to Ballad of the Goddesses, but you know, for Stardew.
Man, I miss that. Do you remember Video Games Live, like the predecessor to Symphony of the Goddess? Like, that was great. I remember going to that back in like 2000 and, God, I don't even know, like 7 or whatever. And like, there was no Nintendo stuff there. It was like Halo and stuff. And I don't even think there was Final Fantasy. So I was a little bit bummed, but it was pretty sweet nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a great time. I'm glad that you got to go to that. That's cool.
Yeah. I'm glad I did it too.
Yeah.
So I'm a little tired, a little, maybe out of it today. So hopefully I can keep up with our discussion today.
Well, that's not good because we wing some shows, ladies and gentlemen, here and there, but today we're going to be winging hard because we kind of came up with the topic very last minute and we were discussing the finer details as we had already sent ourselves live. So, so that's what we got going on. We're going to be talking about sequels. And direct sequels specifically to the Zelda series. What we should probably touch on first, though, before we do that, is the discourse from last week's episode. Because I feel like, I don't know, I kind of thought that we would get a little bit more flack than we did for last week's show. And I think that there's a lot of people, now, like, a lot of people are just like, listen, man, like, take it easy on Tears of the Kingdom. This is an amazing game. But I think there's a lot of people that are kind of in, Let's call it my camp. How about that? Because I think you were more, you know, positive, if you want to call it that. But I there was a lot of people that were just like, yeah, this pretty much sums it up for me. It kind of sums up my feelings about the game. And I think like myself, a lot of people that I talked to and comments that I saw, a lot of it, unfortunately, like I said, is somewhat of it is out of Tears of the Kingdom's control, because that time in between Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom was a big issue, I think, for a lot of people, for the final product that we got. That's kind of what I picked up in talking to a few different people. I don't know if you had anything similar, any comments that you saw or whatnot, but I was surprised, because I was expecting to hear about it, that we didn't, more so.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't read if any new reviews came up from last week's episode. I did pop into the Discord a little bit. People were talking about mainly the depths, I think, is what one of the main conversations was, and how disappointing the depths was. And I think that's like a really fair, you know, feeling to have. People were disappointed that it felt so empty, that once you kind of did one thing, you already knew everything about the depths. I think the depths have a lot of redeeming qualities that I talked about last week, but I can see why it's like a point of issue with the game. So I know that was a discussion I was in last week, but yeah. I didn't see much else, and I was kind of expecting to be like, wow, you guys are so I was worried that we were too negative.
I was too. I make a conscious effort, because like you gotta walk a little bit of a line, right? Because like you want to tell your opinion, you want to tell how you feel, and like, but at the same time, you don't want to just beat a dead horse. It's much more fun to do a show where you're talking about things that are awesome than things that are not. Mm-hmm. And so I was a little bit trepidatious going into last week's show, and I thought that it came off well. I thought that we made our points succinctly, and I think that people, even if they didn't agree, kind of understood. And I don't think that we were alone. I think that there's a lot more people than we think that were like, especially as time went on. Because listen, you play Tears of the Kingdom and it's awesome. Like it's a fun time when you play it. There's lots and lots and lots of great stuff in that game. But the overall package, there's just that little bit of an aftertaste in your mouth. Kind of just seeps in. It fills your tongue. It fills your jowls. And it's just not quite right. It's almost like drinking Malort. Yeah.
No, I wouldn't compare Tears to Malort ever, but...
Well, that depends on if you like Malort or not.
No! I hated Malort. It's awful, but like, that's what I'm trying to say, is like, I still love Tears of the Kingdom, despite some of the issues I have with it. I would never say that I would like Malort, despite all the issues I have with it.
I actually... dude, they imported... Malort, we have this really fancy bar downtown. It's like a beer bar where there's like a gajillion different beers from all over the world. And they had Malort a couple months ago. And I was just like, should I go to this bar that I've only been to once in my life, bottle screw bills, and like see if I could buy a bottle of Malort? And unfortunately, they told me I couldn't buy a bottle, or else I probably would have. But they're like, well, we have shots of it. And I was like, you know, I don't really want to shoot it. I just want to prove that it's real. To people, you know?
Yeah.
Anyways. So so just to qualify last week's show, because we're not done talking about Tears of the Kingdom, and what we decided that we would do this week is kind of I guess like compare and contrast Tears of the Kingdom with the other direct sequels in the Zelda series. And I feel like we should put a few qualifying statements here, or else we're going to get beat up about this. And I think we're going to get beat up about this anyways. But these are what we picked as direct sequels in the Zelda series. And then after we're done, we will explain why we picked these games. So the direct sequels that we're going to be comparing and contrasting Tears of the Kingdom to are Majora's Mask, Phantom Hourglass, and A Link Between Worlds. One more time. Majora's Mask, Phantom Hourglass, and A Link Between Worlds. Now, I can hear some people just being like, you guys suck. Why are you leaving out this game? So here's our thing. We were kind of deliberating this very quickly before we went on air, and we were like, okay, is Zelda 2 Adventure of Link, like, is that a direct sequel? I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's the same link. I don't know if it's the same world. I don't think it is. And that game to me feels like so far removed from the first Zelda in terms of basically everything that almost just seems like it's got nothing to do with the first game. Where I think like Phantom Hourglass, Majora's Mask, and A Link Between Worlds very clearly have something to do with their predecessors. And we use the same logic because Al was like, well, what about Link's Awakening? That's a direct sequel to A Link to the Past, which is true by the letter of the law. But I was like, you know, I feel like, yes, it's the same Link, but there's nothing really that has anything to do in common with those two games with each other that make it a direct sequel versus a next installment in the series. And I know that maybe is semantics for a lot of people, but I do think that there's a difference between a sequel and the next installment in the series, even if that same installment has the same Link. Because at that point, you could be like, well, hey, isn't Twilight Princess a direct sequel to Ocarina of Time? Isn't this? Isn't that? Isn't blah, blah, blah? So that's our criteria that we picked.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have anything more to say to that. I think Majora's Mask makes a lot of sense. I think that Phantom Hourglass makes a lot of sense. It's like something that we know takes place. Like, you finish that game, and then this immediately takes place. Same with, like, you know, Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, etc. But, like, when it comes to sometimes, like, Nintendo will be like, yeah, this takes place directly after this game, but we don't really, I don't know, we don't really see the connection.
Yeah.
Or we're not brushed, in my case, not brushed up on the lore enough to really see the connection, for example, between Zelda 1 and Zelda 2. I had no idea. No clue. I've only just recently replayed Zelda 1 for the first time in, like, I don't know, so many years. So that's just one of those things where it's like, these are obvious direct sequels to us.
And we're sort of even breaking our own criteria by including A Link Between Worlds, but I mean, like, come on, like, that is definitely a very clear sequel to A Link Between Worlds, or like maybe sequel is not the right word, but that's what we're going to be calling it today. One game that could have had a shot at being on this list is Four Swords Adventures, which is technically a sequel to Four Swords, but I kind of feel like those are like so different and so unique in terms of Zelda. Like, they're just kind of their own thing. They sit at their own table kind of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is definitely like an odd discussion to have, but I think, like, let's just say that we picked the games that we want to discuss in this medium.
Exactly.
How about that? Yeah.
So we, that being said, our qualifying statement, I know we're going to hear about it, but man, take it easy on us, okay? We don't have time to compare and contrast Tears of the Kingdom to every single other Zelda game that has ever existed. So what we're going to do instead, we're going to focus on those three titles and talk about some specific things, specific categories that, again, we kind of made up on the fly here, and talk about how those compare to what Tears of the Kingdom did. So what we're here to talk about specifically is four key pillars. And if the sequel has all four pillars, then it will stand as its own house. That analogy went right off the rails. But here's the four pillars that we are talking about today. So number one, continuity. Does this feel like an actual sequel or does it not? And again, that's kind of where, you know, the sequel versus the next installment into the series comes in. So all of these are already veering into the territory of, like, it feels like a sequel, but how much so? And does it feel like a sequel more than Tears of the Kingdom?
Mm-hmm.
Number two is going to be overall newness. And this is particularly more so to do with, like, the story, the world, the characters, stuff like that. Does it feel new, or does it feel like we're kind of retreading the same ground here? Pillar number three, the gameplay gimmick. Is it the same? Is it different? Is it just more of the same? Are we trying something new? So that's a big one. And then number four, does it stand on its own? Can you play it without having played the previous game and still find it awesome? Does it take what the previous game did first and do it better and make that first game somewhat obsolete? Not obsolete, but you know what I mean. So those are our kind of general pillars that we're going to be discussing here. And I guess we should just get right into it here, Al, because we had a lot going on last week with Tears of the Kingdom, a lot to discuss, and I think we're going to be having our hands full again. So let's talk about your favorite topic, which is continuity.
Yes. Yeah, so, Oh, sorry. Were you going to say something else?
No, I was just going to say, like, you take it away. You can talk about, you know, how that's important to you. And then we'll go game by game. We'll compare Tears of the Kingdom's continuity. And we'll talk about the continuity of the other sequel. So I'll turn it over to you, Al.
Okay, I like it. Okay, continuity. I just want to, like, really quickly kind of explain why this, I feel like this is important to me personally, but why it should be important to, like, everybody, I feel. I like to read books. You know, I like to watch movies, and if something is like a direct sequel, I would love it to have like the connection to the first installment of whatever it is I watched, whatever it is I read, whatever it is I played. And if it doesn't, and it really kind of takes me out of the immersion of the story. It takes me out of the world building. It takes me away from the characters, because I'm over here trying to figure out, wait, how does this connect to the story that I've already, like, established with reading the first installment, the first, watching the first movie, etc.
Yeah.
So that's why I get really big on continuity, because using Tears of the Kingdom as a quick example, you know, there's a lot of stuff where I'm like, well, what happened to all the things that I played and saw in the first game that are no longer happening or seen in the second game? And it really kind of took me out of enjoying the moment, enjoying the story, enjoying the game. Yeah. So that's why I think continuity is really important. So I guess we could just start with Majora's Mask.
Well, before we get there, hold on. I want to weigh in really quickly on Tears of the Kingdom.
Go for it.
I agree with you. I agree verbatim with you, but I will say, it didn't bug me as much as I think it bugged you with Tears of the Kingdom. It still kind of was weird sometimes when you're talking to characters and they have no idea who you are. But I do think that there was enough storyline continuity for me where I wasn't just like losing my mind a bunch of times. But again, that I didn't weigh it as much as maybe you did. Like, it doesn't mean as much to me as you. So I agree with you pretty much verbatim with some of your critiques about Tears of the Kingdom's continuity or lack thereof. I think it just got away with it a little bit more for me. But that being said, yeah, let's talk about Majora's Mask continuity, because I feel like this is a weird one. This is a weird one,
but it's so weird that it works, you know? So you play Ocarina of Time, you know, Link goes through his adventure, he gets sent back in time, and Navi leaves. You know, her mission is done, she takes off. And then you start playing Majora's Mask, and you learn that Link is hunting in the Lost Woods for his lost friend Navi, right? So yeah. I feel like that's instantly a continuity. You know exactly where this story is starting. It's starting right after you finish Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
And then all this like crazy loopiness happens, and it puts you into this kind of alternate universe, and it's so weird where it has like all these same characters, all these same like it's like a different world, but the exploration of the world is the same. There's a new there's a couple new gimmicks. There's the masks and stuff, and we'll talk about that later. But you can tell that it's like obviously using the same engine as Ocarina of Time, using the same like visuals as Ocarina of Time. You got the same little NPCs everywhere. They just have different names and stuff. So you're thrown into this alternate reality. So I think like even though it's not an exact continuous of Ocarina of Time in that same reality, it works in a way. They were able to do it. They were able to throw you into something different while still saying, like, this is coming directly after what happened in Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, it kind of depends on how you look at the world of Termina. We'll get your mileage on the continuity of this game, because like you're right, it starts off very directly. You are Link, you're wandering the Lost Woods, and you're looking for your friend. That's clearly what is, you know, where young Link from Ocarina of Time ended, and now you see him going on his journey. That's great. But when you fall into that creepy world of Termina, and you're going through all of that really great sequence where like all the things are flashing on the screen and whatever, it looks really cool. Nintendo never explicitly said outright that this was like an alternate universe. I think you can infer pretty easily that it was. And didn't they say something in that, it wasn't Hyrule Historia, it was something else, the compendium, not the compendium, like one of those books that they made, they I think did come out and outright say like, oh, Majora's Mask was all a dream or like something like that. And people hated it.
Yeah, it was something to the likes of like being a figment of Skull Kid's imagination.
Yeah, so something like, which, you know what, whatever, that's fine enough for me. But I think if you look at it as like a different, like twisted version of reality, then you can get like pretty far in terms of like, yeah, okay, this is pretty similar, because it's like the identical continuity, because you have the identical characters, the identical everything, like everything is created, but it's twisted a little bit and not quite right. So mm-hmm. I think in terms of that, it actually works like spectacularly in terms of continuity, because it's kind of taking what you know, but just tweaking it a little bit to make it new. So I think it works well.
Yeah, and it what it does is, like, instead of saying, hey, this is taking place in the same world as Ocarina of Time, like, you know that Tears of the Kingdom is to Breath of the Wild, you can tell this is, like, an alternate reality. So it doesn't need to be, like, that as connected to Ocarina of Time as I needed Tears to be to Breath of the Wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so a couple great comments here. So the Zelda Encyclopedia, that's what we were thinking of. That's mm-hmm. the one where it says Termina is based on Skull Kid's memory, so you were right, Al. And then I guess the manual also says that this is kind of a parallel world and is similar to and yet different from the land of Hyrule. So I guess they do actually pretty much just come right out and say it. Mm-hmm. God, I wish that like when you had NSO, like you could just see the manuals and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like that'd be so cool. Awesome. Like flipping mm-hmm. through some of the old, especially like NES manuals and Super Nintendo manuals, that'd be so good. I think when you look at it like that, then it really works, because it's really cool because it's using the limitations of the system and also using it to its advantage, but also like because it came out so quickly after Ocarina of Time, it's also using that to its advantages as well. So pretty cool continuity for Majora's Mask. You know, one of the things that that I think that Phantom Hourglass does exceptionally well is that continuity. Everything that's as direct a sequel as you're going to get in the Zelda series. I mean, it literally pretty much starts like right after Wind Waker finishes off, right? Like you've got Tetra, you've got everything that happened, but you still have a new world. You still have the continuity of like, you've still got the Great Sea, you've still got everything there. I feel like that one to me feels like as like super sequel-ish to me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, this is kind of a similar thing actually to Majora's Mask and maybe Link's Awakening if we want to stretch that far too, is that you are with Tetra and the pirates after the events of Wind Waker. You're exploring the ocean, and then you come across the ghost ship, and Tetra is taken away, and Link feels like he appears to be in like some kind of shipwreck. But what happens really is that he's again thrust into an alternate reality of the world that he knows. He's taken to a totally different ocean. He is actually like experiencing the Ocean King's view of, or his like realm, you know, of what, I don't know, Hyrule isn't the right word because it's the ocean.
The Great Sea.
Right. So it's not even exactly like the same. It's not the same map. It's not the same anything. It's different islands, different bits of the ocean per like the experience of the Ocean King. So once again, like the continuity from the start of the game is great because you know you're on an adventure right after Wind Waker, but then you're thrust into a different world that's very similar to what you know in Wind Waker, but now it's Phantom Hourglass. You have new places to explore. You have new connections to make. It's funny, there are a little bit of the NPCs that look the same, but they're different characters. So it's very similar to what they did with Majora's Mask.
I have to admit, actually, I didn't know that. I just thought it was like, all right, this is just a continuation. I didn't know it was like an alternate reality. And I actually almost think that I like that less, to be honest. Like, in terms of continuity, like, here's my personal line. I can totally accept that, like, it's the same world, but it looks different. There's different islands and stuff, and maybe it's just a portion of the Great Sea that we didn't see in Wind Waker. I could totally buy that. Like, I have no problem accepting that. I know maybe some people wouldn't. Your mileage would vary, so I understand why they did that. But, I don't know. I feel like the continuity is great in this game. Like, you got a lot of the same characters, a lot of the same, like, people that show up. I think that this game did a pretty good job of that. Which, I guess, let's just go right to the last game that is on our list here. That's A Link Between Worlds. This is, like, kind of... because, like, it kind of doesn't feel like it's related to A Link to the Past, really, all that much. To me, at least, because, like, it's got, like, the completely... like, it kind of does and it kind of doesn't. Like, I'd say that this game is, like, sort of on par for Tears of the Kingdom for me, because it's, like, sometimes it feels like, yeah, we're in the total same world. Sometimes it's, like, you're a brand new Link, brand new everything. Like, you've got, you know, there's no... you've got all the same buildings, like, the everything is the same, the world is the same, but you've got these completely new characters that don't know you. You've got, like, it feels like it's new but connected to the last world, just on based on the world alone rather than like the characters or the plot or anything like that.
I kind of get what you're saying. So this is where I was wondering, when we were discussing our games before the show started, I was wondering, is A Link Between Worlds a direct sequel? I really don't understand the lore in between the two. Somebody who's much smarter than me can please come and explain it. So to me, it feels like it's like a different telling of the same story in the same world, but like it's more modernized. It came out like 20 years later. Is it 20 years? I think so. It just feels like it's a different story told in the same world, told with it's hard to explain. It's hard to explain to me what Link Between Worlds even is, because it's like the exact same map, right? You have the light and the dark side. You've got Hyrule and Lorule. You've got Zelda. You're helping her. You're helping the sages. You got like a wizard kind of villain, and then you got the Ganon villain. And obviously they have the added elements of Hilda and Ravio. So like it... somebody needs to just explain to me the continuity, because I don't see the continuity. They just feel different, but like part of the same world for somehow.
Here's the thing. Like we're kind of breaking our own guidelines and rules, because it's not by the letter of the law. This is not a direct sequel, because it takes place like a long time after. But it's we're counting it as a direct sequel because it's so close to what Tears of the Kingdom is, which is like the exact same world, and I think basically it's just the same world, but some time has passed. And it's kind of how you have a remake without having a remake, also in the same sense, right?
That's like, yeah, that's always what I thought too. Is like it felt like a remake, but it wasn't the same story.
Yeah, and that's fine actually. I think like it's the same world, which I think is fine. There's just a little bit of time in between, so the continuity there is a little bit lacking, but that's not necessarily the game's fault, because it's not necessarily a direct sequel. For our purposes, though, we're just including it as such. So I feel like I'm actually okay with that. Let's talk about overall newness. And it, again, this is more so like in terms of like story, characters, things that happen. And I think that actually most of these games do a pretty good job of at least kind of... actually, before we even move on, let's put a bow on continuity. Sorry to back up for a quick sec here, Al. Do you think that any of these games did a better or worse job than Tears of the Kingdom did with continuity? Because I would potentially say that other than A Link Between Worlds, which is kind of like a weird one, I think Majora's Mask and Phantom Hourglass both did a better job with continuity than Tears of the Kingdom.
I think it's kind of a wash, to be honest. It's almost unfair that Majora's Mask and Phantom Hourglass are said to have better continuity, because they take place in alternate reality. They're allowed to get away with not having the connections between the two games. Like, you can tell the obvious things. When it comes to Tears of the Kingdom, that is, like, the most pure sense of the word direct sequel. It doesn't happen in an alternate reality. It's the same exact world. It's the same exact story. It's, like, 5 or 6 years later, 6 or 7, whatever. We don't know because they didn't tell us. It's literally you're the same Link, you're the same Zelda, you have the same NPCs, you have the same everything. That's, in my mind, the most pure form of direct sequel. They just did it poorly, but when it comes to Majora's Mask, they can get away with it. It's an alternate reality. So I think, honestly, like, it's a wash. I think they are better sequels on Majora's Mask side, but it's kind of unfair to say because they do things differently.
Which is fair. I think that's a fair statement. I still, even given that, I think that it's easier for me to accept, like, those are, like, even if it's in an alternate reality, they feel more in line with the sequel at times than Tears of the Kingdom does. A Link Between Worlds aside, because that kind of has the same problem, I think, that Tears does. But at least with A Link Between Worlds, there's a large amount of time that has taken place in between those two games. Or so we're led to believe, anyways. Overall newness, and again, this is mostly in terms of like characters, story, world, etc. I think, well, let's start with Majora's Mask, because this one's pretty easy, I feel like. And again, it's kind of cheating, because like you have an alternate reality, but I mean, even in that alternate reality, you have entirely new world, entirely new regions, you have an entirely new, I mean, really an entirely new race of species, like the Deku. I guess the Deku Scrubs have been around before, but not really explored like that in Ocarina of Time. You have a lot of new, I feel like, there, which is kind of offset by the fact that you have all the same characters, but those characters have been twisted and molded and shaped into new versions of those characters. So it's kind of like, again, kind of like using your limitations as a strength, which is why Majora's Mask is so exceptional. It's one of the best Zelda games, in my opinion, and that's a big reason why. But for me, this really kind of is the king of, like, overall newness in of our list here. Because, like, even though it uses so much of the same stuff, like, man, like, Clock Town as a world and as an ecosystem and as characters, like, just feels incredibly fleshed out. And, you know, I mean, credit to Majora's Mask too, because I think when you think of a lot of those characters that were introduced in Ocarina of Time, the definitive version of those characters is really in Majora's Mask, like the Postman or like Anju or, like, you know, some of those characters. So I it still introduced, like, tons of new original great characters. I mean, number one, Majora's Mask. Skull Kid is who I should have mentioned too. The definitive version is in this game. But I mean, you got like the Hand in the Toilet. That's a great new character. You've got, you know, just like Pamela and her dad. Like, there's a lot of, like, really new great things that are happening in this game. So for me, this is actually like a home run in terms of overall newness.
I'm in agreement, I think, because it took everything that we know from Ocarina of Time and it made it different. So you got Termina instead of Hyrule. You have these different regions, these different dungeons instead of the ones that we know from Ocarina of Time. You have the races, but they're, like, totaled in a different way. So, you know, the Deku Scrubs, yeah, we've, like, had enemy Deku Scrubs, we've had traitor Deku Scrubs in Ocarina of Time, but now we actually have, like, a civilization that we know about and can interact with.
Yeah.
You have the Zoras, which you could interact with too, but not a lot of them actually had, like, names and personalities, except for two of them. So now you have a whole, like, race of Zoras that you get to know, the whole band, Mikau and, what was her name in... What was Ruto's name in Majora's Mask? She was something different. Lulu? Was
Lulu.
That?
Yeah,
Lulu. Yeah, Lulu with her eggs, you know? And it's like, there's just more. It took what Ocarina of Time did. Like, Ocarina of Time is such a substantial game for, like, exploration and dungeons, whereas Majora's Mask is, like, even more exceptional for its story and world building. I feel like the newness is, like exceptional in Majora's Mask. Like you said, you have a lot of NPCs that you reuse, but they have different, more fleshed out stories. You have new NPCs that you didn't have before, like Cafe and Cafe's parents.
We left out a crucial NPC that was introduced in this game.
Uh-oh, who is it?
You know who. The Dancing Man? No.
Oh, God.
You know who. Tingle.
Oh, Tingle. Yeah, Tingle. Yeah, you're right.
Koala, Lupa, Lampora, blah, blah. I don't know what the hell he says.
You know what's so funny? Catherine was practicing Majora's Mask a few weeks ago, and she was talking to the guy who is Tingle's father. And it made me really think. I'm like, there's no way that guy is old enough to have a 35-year-old fairy son. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Hey. Something works differently when you're a Hylian. Now we do have to call out because Majora's Mask is certainly not perfect. There are elements that it does reuse, and those feel a little bit too on the. Similarly, like when you go into the Skulltula houses, that feels a little same. But I even have to admit, I kind of liked having just like the having the one area where I know that all of them are going to be. Right. Mm-hmm. So like it was almost like a little mini dungeon in a sense. And like, so I thought that was cool. But, you know, calling a spade, we should just call that out like that. That is, you know, the same thing as Ocarina of Time. I can't think of a ton of other new instances or other instances like that in the game, to be honest. So that might be the only one that comes to mind for me in terms of things that I'm just like, this kind of feels a little bit like of a holdover from the previous game. But I mean, if that's the worst, that's not too bad at all.
Yeah, I agree. I think they just took, like, yes, this is a direct sequel, but it's also in the alternate reality, so they could have like complete creative control with it, and like they were able to get away with the lack of continuity by making up with the newness.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about Phantom Hourglass. Overall newness. This is 'cause like, again, by the letter of the law, like, there's tons of new islands. There's obviously tons of new characters. I mean, Linebeck, you know, that's one of your biggest new characters. Ciella wasn't in the last game. So there is, like, a ton of stuff that's new, definitely. And it is a new world. I will say it's almost a little bit undone to me by you're still on the Great Ocean, which does invariably compare itself to Wind Waker, like, and not that that's not what you want to do, like, it's a sequel to Wind Waker, it probably should compare to Wind Waker, but it's because you're on the Great Sea sailing around so much, it doesn't feel as new as it probably should, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Let me counter this with, it's almost cheating because it's a different console, so you're experiencing it in a completely new, different way.
You
the
are.
Way you sail is, like, completely different.
And it's much better, by the way.
You can rebuild your ship in different ways. You find pieces, and then you can create this, like, cool masterpiece of a ship.
Yeah.
Of course, I haven't done that since the game originally came out, so...
I haven't done it ever.
the way you can, like, hunt for treasure is totally different. It's almost a little mini game.
Yeah.
The way you, like, see the islands coming at you on the horizon is totally different. So it is, like, the newness in Phantom Hourglass is definitely there. It's like they took the stuff from Wind Waker and they were like, how can we do this on a different console? And they did. And it's almost cheating because it is a very new feeling, even though it's similar.
I completely agree. And I think that is valid. I just like, and again, like what I'm saying, you could easily counter that argument. Well, with like, well, what's the difference between running in Hyrule Field and Ocarina of Time versus Twilight Princess? Isn't that the same thing? And it's like, yeah, it kind of is. But for me, like I completely, like, what you're saying is right. It's just like, by virtue of you're still sailing on your boat. And I'm not saying that it's not new. It doesn't feel as new as it probably should. For me, you know what I mean? But yeah. I mean, that being said, like you're right. Like pretty much everything in this game is new and really, really fresh in a lot of ways. And including, I mean, we'll get into the gameplay mechanics in a little bit, but, this game, I think does a good job of feeling new, even though it clearly is like still very tied to that sailing gimmick, which was, you know, Wind Waker's bread and butter. But, You're right. Sailing, I think, is much better in Phantom Hourglass. Like, it's you could just draw. That's actually the only, and I'm jumping ahead a little bit here to the gameplay gimmick, but, like, that's one of the only times where I was just like, all right, stylus is awesome. Great. Yeah. Let's do it. Okay, well, then let's talk about A Link Between Worlds. And I'm going to actually say this, even though it's the identical same world, this feels a lot more new to me than, like, potentially Tears of the Kingdom did. And maybe that's not fair to Tears of the Kingdom, but like I feel like Lorule, even though it was basically just a dark world, still felt vastly different to me. There was like different segments of the game which were kind of like a new twist on an old spin from A Link to the Past. So again, like I feel like I wouldn't exactly say that I would give A Link Between Worlds like I don't know, a passing mark, I guess, in terms of overall newness, but I think it very clearly was not going for overall newness. Like, it wanted that nostalgia. And I do think that the time difference between the games matters. I think it does. Like, I think that when you're kind of like a quasi remake, you want it to feel the same but updated, versus where with Tears of the Kingdom and Breath of the Wild, that's not a remake. That's like that direct sequel. And again, I know we're cheating because we're talking about direct sequels and like Worlds is on here, but I feel like that time difference matters. Like, I feel like people wanted new with Tears of the Kingdom, or at least I did, and people kind of wanted to re-experience, but with a new twist in Link Between Worlds, and that's what that game delivered.
I don't know. I think maybe I might be contemplating this too literally, because when I consider what a Link Between Worlds is to A Link to the Past, it's the same exact map, just slightly different. Same with Tears of the Kingdom. It's the same exact map, but slightly different. And I just would argue that that's like the exact same thing that happened on both terms. So to me, it's not like A Link Between Worlds has that overall newness that makes you feel like, oh, this is a new way to explore.
Right.
For me, that Tears of the Kingdom was a new way to explore. There were portions where I was like, oh, this is the same exact place I was in Breath of the Wild. But they changed a lot of aspects. There's a lot of caves. The volcano is no longer active, etc. So, like, A Link Between Worlds did that too, where they had different, like, it was, you could explore the different, like, tears between the two worlds and, like, probably reach places that you couldn't reach in A Link to the Past. Mm-hmm. So I would say that they're actually a lot more similar than we're giving them credit for here.
Probably, I mean, like, obviously, like, the biggest way that A Link Between Worlds sets itself apart from A Link to the Past is in terms of gameplay, which we'll touch upon, particularly the structure of the game. But I, like, to counter that, too, like, and I know that we had new characters introduced in Tears of the Kingdom, but to me, those characters didn't feel, like, very overall important to the story. Here we have Ravio, we have Hilda, who do feel very important to the overall story. Plus, we got to meet, and again, I guess you could make this argument that each game before had this, like, A Link to the Past had their eight sages or what have you, but, like, in this game, it feels like more, like, small little stories that are connected around, versus, like, in Link to the Past, it was just, like, go save sage number one, and then sage number two, and then sage number three, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So it's almost got that Ocarina of Time vibe to me, where it's like these mini stories that connect to an overall picture. I mean, I wouldn't counter what you said, because I think that's fair. And I think mm-hmm. if you feel that way, like, that's fair. To me, it feels a little bit more, again, like, it feels a little bit more updated. And I do think, not to harp on this, but, like, I think the time in between those games does matter when you're talking about how it feels.
Mm-hmm. It's funny that you brought up the sages, because it's the same in Tears. So, like, in Breath of the Wild, you're going and dealing with the champions. Yes, you kind of talk to the new champions, that, as we were calling them back in the day, a little bit. But in Tears of the Kingdom, you're awakening them as sages, and it's almost the same in between A Link to the Past and A Link Between Worlds. You had the sages you were going to save in each of the temples, but now you're getting to know them a little bit more, the new sages. So it's kind of funny that, like, they are actually a lot closer than the other sequels that we talked about, where they could just get away with anything because they're in an alternate reality.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
Wasn't there an imprisoning war in A Link to the Past too?
There was. Yep.
There you go. They're the same.
and that's a fair argument to have. Like, I can't sit here and counter any of what you're saying. I think if you're looking at it like that, like, yeah, that's by the letter of the law. You're totally right. I do think for me it's a little bit different, again, because we're talking about overall newness. And I guess the only difference is that we knew all those characters from Breath of the Wild. And not to say that you know, you have to have all new characters in a sequel. If you still have, like, a new story arc for a new character in a sequel, that's completely engaging, too. Mm-hmm. And I do think Tears of the Kingdom did a good job of that with, you know, Yunobo. I mean, that was a great little subplot.
Yeah.
I think that the Riju one was pretty good. I think that Tulin was pretty good. I didn't care for Sidon in this game too much in Tears of the Kingdom. Pretty much anything in Zul.
We did get to see an evolution of his life, becoming king and getting married and all that kind of stuff, which was nice. But I agree, yeah. I wasn't as connected to it as the others.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I would give Majora's Mask definitely a passing grade in terms of overall newness. I think that's, like, the number one. I'd probably list them like this: Majora's Mask first, Phantom Hourglass second, Link Between Worlds third. And maybe Tears of the Kingdom tied for third as well.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
I think that's fair. This is where I think, like, we really set ourselves apart, though, and that's in the gameplay gimmick of each of these games. And let's start with Majora's Mask. So Majora's Mask is clearly same engine, same physics, same combat, same everything as Ocarina of Time, but you have some pretty daring stuff that Majora's Mask did. A lesser game would have introduced only the mask transformations, and that would have been enough to set it apart from Ocarina of Time. Or it would have introduced only the 3-day cycle, and that would have been enough to separate it from Ocarina of Time. Majora's Mask is like, we're doing both. We're doing both. And like, I mean, that really sets it apart. So it's a really nice kind of niche where it feels really familiar, but completely new at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the gimmick is like super interesting because, again, Ocarina of Time, it set the standard for a lot of Zelda games, a lot of video games. It's great, but it is pretty like vanilla, you know, whereas you get to Majora's Mask.
Whoa.
And just like, listen, you know what I mean? Like, the gimmick is like, it's just kind of like straight and narrow.
Can't we at least just say chocolate ice cream?
Chocolate ice cream, whatever.
Thank you.
I'm just saying, it's like, you know, it's just straight to the point. You go here, here, and here, and the story is great, and the dungeons are great. But when you get to Majora's Mask, you have the added elements of transforming into these races. You have the added elements of racing against the clock and like stressing out about your time, but also like enjoying the stories that come along with it. Like the fact that you have to go and like fight aliens at 1 o'clock in the morning over on the night of the ranch is like, that's insane. That's outside of the realm that Ocarina of Time presented to us. So it's like they took this thing and they were like, we have some continuity, but it's like a totally different world and we get to do whatever we want creatively with it. And they went with it. They went for it, you know?
Yeah. Good stuff. The aliens, man, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like I said, like, I think you could have gotten away with just doing one of those gimmicks, let alone two of them. So it really, in terms of gameplay, really sets itself apart from Ocarina of Time in a really good way. Let's go to Phantom Hourglass. I think that this game, unfortunately, goes the other way. And so the complete gimmick of this game, everything is based on the stylus. Mm-hmm. And your mileage is going to vary depending on if you like the stylus or not. But I've got big, fat fingers. And so my fingers are not great at, number one, like holding my clammy small little DS, later my new 3DS, and then number two, having my stylus and trying to make these very precise motions. So I'm just like, I've always got it at an angle and I'm trying to make the circle so Link rolls, and I'm just like, god damn it, like, just do what I want. I wish you could just move normally. I think if you could move normally everything else in the game, if it was tied to the stylus, that would be fine. But,
yeah, because, like, the stylus is super cool with a lot of the stuff, except for moving.
Yeah, like, boomerang, bomb shoes, sailing. Yeah. Sailing's fine in that game. Like, I think it's completely fine. So, but, I mean, the question here is, like, does it set itself apart with the gameplay? And I think, I mean, the answer has to be yes, right? Like,
mm-hmm. I mean,
for better or worse.
When you consider, like, what you were doing in Wind Waker, again, it's kind of, like, straightforward and to the point, whereas you have, like, a totally crazy gimmick in this sequel of Phantom Hourglass, and, like, yes, sometimes it's really obnoxious, but, again, they went for it, and it was unique, and they did something different, and as maybe you don't enjoy doing it that much, but it's, like, definitely out there and different and crazy, and it's cool that they did that.
Yeah, well, It was a bold choice, I guess. I guess it wasn't that bold, though. I actually, this is a kind of a separate conversation here, Al, but I was talking to the Omega server yesterday, and I kind of threw out there into the world, in my opinion, I think that in terms of first-party Nintendo games, I actually think the DS is one of the weakest systems that Nintendo ever made.
Okay.
I think the mainline Marios aren't that good. The mainline Zeldas aren't as comparatively good. The mainline Metroids weren't good. There were no mainline Donkey Kong.
DS by itself or the DS family?
what do you like? Just DS games, like not 3DS, just the DS.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought.
3DS, okay. I think, is one of the best that they ever did, actually. but yeah, the DS, I feel even like Pokemon. I know people love the Pokemon games, but I'm kind of like, anyways, that's a sidebar. We can debate that in Discord if you want, but yeah, I think. I mean, it was a choice. I understand why they did it. Nintendo has traditionally liked to tie their gameplay gimmicks to whatever system that they happen to be on. They did the same thing with Metroid 2. You have to move around with the stylus, and it sucks. I don't like it, but you can't say that they just, like, didn't try something new, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Very true.
Yeah. A Link Between Worlds. Mm-hmm. This is where the game really sets itself apart, I think, in terms of gameplay.
I agree, yeah.
The obvious one, which is that you can merge into walls, and that is a ton of different puzzle options and stuff like that, which is a great mechanic. I think that's so fun. Like, that is such a fun ability to do. But I think actually the more pressing thing that this game did to differentiate itself from A Link to the Past, and frankly, like, almost every other Zelda game at that point, is, like, you can kind of pick your own dungeons. Like, whatever order that you want to go in, you can do so. I think the only one that you can't do right away is the sand dungeon, because the sand rod has been rented by that doofus that went over there to save it. But I mean, that was like a pretty big deal. Like, you can buy your items too. Like, they changed how you got items, they changed the way that you permanently got items, they changed the way that you could actually go and get to the dungeons. That's a pretty big change, a pretty big departure. Plus, when you add in the wall merging, like, that's a really big departure from A Link to the Past. And to be fair, A Link to the Past was really the first top-down 2D Zelda game. I mean, obviously NES Zelda aside, but like, Link to the Past really kind of laid down the law for how the structure, the flow, and the series would work. So it's kind of like the Ocarina of Time in that way, where it's just like, this is the blueprint for how it should be done. So yes, of course, A Link to the World had to do something to differentiate itself, but mm-hmm. I think it did a really good job of doing that in terms of gameplay and in terms of structure.
I think that we're going to find in this category that we're talking about, even when we start talking about tiers, like, Nintendo does have a way of taking what they had to begin with, their base, and just evolving it in a great way. Maybe you don't enjoy every single gimmick that they do, but they try and they put themselves out there and do these cool things to make a much more fun experience than the first time you played it, you know? So with A Link to the Past, like, yeah, it's a fantastic game, but again, it's bare, it's like the straightforward, and I'm gonna keep saying that, but then you get to A Link Between Worlds and they're like, check out this new way you can travel between the two realms, Hyrule and Laurel, you know, and you like go through those little tears in the reality. Check out how you could solve puzzles by merging into the walls. Check out the fact that you can rent these items, and also you don't have to like pick up arrows or anything. It's based on the magic bar or whatever. And I just think that's too, really cool.
That's a great idea.
It made it like such a really fun, interesting, enjoyable experience, even though I knew I was in the same exact map as A Link to the Past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, again, not to beat up on this point, I think that A Link Between Worlds gets away with a lot because of how far removed it was from the original game, and because of its status as like a somewhat quasi remake, but also a sequel. But even if this was just like a regular old game, like it does like do a lot of things differently in terms of the Zelda formula, the Zelda structure. So I think it does deserve, praise for doing that. And, you know, Tears of the Kingdom, I think in terms of, you know, in a lot of ways, the gameplay gimmick is the same. The structure is the same, but in a lot of ways it's not. Like, Ultra Hand is this incredible experience. And like, whether you like building or don't like building, the fact that you can fuse almost anything together with Ultra Hand is unbelievable. You can make all these really cool vehicles. You can do all this cool stuff. The rewind ability is incredible. Like, that's just like such a cool gimmick. And they kind of feel similar in some way. Like, a lot of these abilities to me feel very similar to their Breath of the Wild counterparts, but different enough. Fuse, I thought, was a great addition and a welcome addition as well. And you know, we kind of beat up on Ascend, but that ended up being a pretty wicked ability to have, and like added a lot of different like features to the gameplay. So I can't even sit here and say that like I think that Tears of the Kingdom gameplay wise is just kind of like, you know, not its own thing, but there is still a little bit too much similarity in some things that we didn't like, and that would be particularly in terms of like dungeons and not for me, but like breakable weapons, I know are a big one for people where it's like those are both back the way that those are back. And I guess the way that these, I don't know if this would fall into overall newness or gameplay or whatever, but like the way that the story's told to where you got to find the locations on the map, like that, those could have probably been updated and tweaked a little bit. But in terms of like pure raw gameplay, like, man, this is, it's great.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I think Nintendo took what they had in Breath of the Wild and they evolved it. So like the magnesis is now kind of your ultra hand and you can actually like mold things together and whatnot. Breaking weapons, well, now you can fuse stuff to make them stronger. You can go feed it to an Octorok to repair it. Like, you can do all these things to help, like, alleviate the stress of your weapons always breaking. The, like, exploration, which was usually just running around and climbing in Breath of the Wild, well, now you have Ascend. You don't have to climb a giant cliff. You can just, like, find a cave under it and go to the top, you know? Or you can create a machine to fly to the top of the mountain. Like, there's different things that you can do now to help with your exploration that you didn't have in Breath of the Wild. So they did evolve it in a great way. The gimmick is a fantastic change and, like, a welcome change. I think it's really fun. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I think they also did a fantastic job, just like they did on all of these other games.
Now, let's also, again, we have to call a spade here. There's a lot of stuff that's just exactly the same. The Koroks are back exactly the same. Shrines are back exactly the same. Like I said, dungeons, they're different, but they're pretty much the same. Even though they're a lot better in this game, that's for sure. And then just the overall structure, I mean, it's identical. So there is a lot of stuff gameplay-wise that is exactly the same. Even though specifically your abilities, that is like a whole new world, and that's clearly what the game was built around, was using those abilities. But it was a little bit disappointing to me that those other things that we mentioned, which I think are important things, are still like they're all back. And like I said last week, like I don't even mind that shrines are back. Like I kind of like that, but because those are really just like little play areas for you to use your new abilities. But I do think that, I mean, it literally was exactly the same. Now, this, again, in terms of overall newness, you know, you've got the sky, you've got the depths, and I think that does count, even though they're not as maybe expansive as we would have wanted, and the caves too. I think some of the problem with Tears of the Kingdom is that it's, like, so big, and that there's so many things that, like, even something really awesome like the caves kind of becomes repetitive as you do so many of them during the course of the game. So it's almost like, you know, it's kind of like less is more a little bit. And frankly, like in terms of Tears of the Kingdom specific case, like more is less.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying for a lot of this being the same or being too much, but like, you also have to give them credit for, like, the Koroks have different puzzles. They have different things that take your new abilities into account. So the little ones that you've got to take to their friends, the ones that you get in the sky where you can just dive and, like, dive bomb them and, like, collect them are pretty cool. When you have these dungeons, like, yeah, they're kind of the same structure, but now you have this, like, extra added ability to build things to get to those modules to unlock them, where you didn't really have that. You just solved the puzzle in Breath of the Wild. Mm-hmm. Like, the caves, I understand where you're coming from with that, too, but, like, I feel like the majority of them are actually a lot different from each other than maybe you remember, because I did all of them, and I thought they were all so interesting and fun. Maybe a couple were kind of the same and boring, but for the most part, a lot of them had to do with, like, stuff that was going on in their area, their region. There was just a lot more, like, connection to them and differentiation, like, differentness to them. I'm trying to find the right word. That I thought they were super interesting. So, like, I get what you're saying. Like, a lot of it is, like, taking the same thing, but at least they evolved it in a way to make it feel somewhat new.
I think that's fair. And I'm just trying to say that they didn't. Like, I actually agree with you about the caves. Like, most of them are pretty distinct. It's just, like, you could say the same about shrines, right? It's like, oh, God, like, I'm about to do my 100th shrine. I just don't want to do these anymore, even though they're all different, right?
Yeah, I
like,
get what you're saying, yeah. You get a little sick of it.
Exactly. And again, it's kind of like, well, I really like shrines. Maybe I'm not into caves as much, so I don't have a problem with the shrines. But when it comes to caves, it's just like, geez, okay. Or like light roots or whatever have you, right? So, mm-hmm. In terms of gameplay, gimmick, though. It's tough not to give all of these like a really high praise. I think this is probably unfair. I'd probably put Tears of the Kingdom at the bottom. That might be unfair, but like Majora's Mask again, I think is like pretty clearly number one because of the time gimmick and the mask gimmick. Maybe I'd put Tears above Phantom Hourglass, actually, because stylus aside, like, a lot of it is kind of just like a Zelda game. There's not really a hook or anything. It's just that stylus gimmick permeates the entire experience. So it's like, it really lives or dies by if you like that stylus gimmick, but you can't deny that it's at least there. So I don't know. Would you? And the Link Between Worlds, I feel like I would put that right under Majora's Mask. So number one for me is going to be Majora's Mask. Number two, Link Between Worlds. I don't know. Tears of the Kingdom, Phantom Hourglass, they're pretty close to me.
Yikes. Big yikes. I would say Majora's Mask first, for sure. And then Tears of the Kingdom. And then The Link Between Worlds. And then Phantom Hourglass. Mostly because, like, yeah, the gimmicks that they've done in these things are really cool. But I'm trying to compare, like, the enjoyability and the, like, challenge of it. So, like, obviously Majora's Mask was really challenging with the time gimmick, etc. And then I also didn't enjoy the stylus as much. Like, there's cool stuff with the stylus, but, like, it was overdone. And it was a cool idea overall, but, like, too much. So that's going to be last on my list. And then even though, like, the merging into the wall thing is really cool in A Link Between Worlds, like, there's only so much space that you can explore with that. So I just thought, like, the ingenuity of being able to build and create whatever you want in Tears of the Kingdom really, like, sets it apart. So to me, it's like Majora's Mask and Tears of the Kingdom, but there's also a huge gap between the other two for me.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think if we're talking about, like, enjoyment, Phantom Hourglass is at the bottom of the barrel for sure. Mm-hmm. It's just, I'm trying to be a little bit objective and fair to that game, because I usually come on the show and kind of dump on it, but say what you will, but that gimmick just goes through the very first moment of that game to the end credits. Like, that gimmick is there, and it does separate, like, what is the word we're looking for? Is it differentiate? Differentiate is the word we're looking for.
Yeah, I was trying to say that too.
I tried to say it earlier. I was like, what the hell is this wording? I better just choose something different. It does differentiate itself from Wind Waker, but I think in a bad way. So if we're talking like what I personally, Phantom Hourglass is at the bottom, and I'd probably put Tears of the Kingdom either third or second, because I do like a lot of the abilities in Tears of the Kingdom, but there are some things that don't change that grate me, which kind of grinds it down a little bit. And again, I've said this before, and I know that I kind of sound like an idiot saying it, and like people are like, ooh, but like, I really love Zelda games, not necessarily for like raw gameplay. You know what I mean? Like, And if you love raw gameplay, if you like building stuff, if you like fusing stuff, Tears of the Kingdom has got to be the best Zelda game that's ever been made. It really does. Like, it's just, it's so good. It's so smooth. It's so fun when you kind of get into that groove. But for me, it kind of did get a little bit tired, where eventually I was like, I don't want to build stuff anymore. I just want to get to the wherever I need to go, right? Like, and so when I say that gameplay, like raw gameplay, isn't what I come to Zelda for, like, of course I want the gameplay to be fun. I want the dungeons, but I also want the dungeons to be fun. I want the story to be good. I want the music to be awesome. I want this, that, whatever, right? So there's more that goes into it, where I think if, like, if you're like the Minecraft generation that just likes building stuff, like, man, this game is so unbelievable. Like, you must love Tears of the Kingdom, but
yeah.
I gotta admit, I've not been into Minecraft or Stardew or any of those games, or not even Mario Maker.
Yeah, I think it's kind of funny that, like, the thing that really grinds my gears about Tears doesn't really affect you that much, and the thing that really grinds your gears about Tears doesn't really affect me much.
Yeah.
So we're kind of like on opposite sides of the spectrum, where I'm like, I think it's actually okay, Andy, and you're like, I think it's actually okay, I'll like, but we're still like kind of stuck on it, you know?
Yin and yang. That's what I'm saying. Okay, let's. This last one is just, it needs to be like a very quick, like, yes or no, with maybe any additional comments that we want to have here. But does the game stand on its own? I think Majora's Mask very clearly stands on its own.
Yeah. Very true.
I think Phantom Hourglass. And we're talking, does it stand on its own in terms of, like, can you enjoy it? Can you play it without, like, you know, playing the original, or like, is it as good? That we're, this is kind of our own definition of what this means. I don't know. I don't know if I'd say Phantom Hourglass does. Part of me is saying no, to be honest. But I think that's part of the gameplay versus like its portion as a direct sequel. But I might. I don't know. I just don't know if anybody is just like, is like, wow, I played Phantom Hourglass and it's so much better than Wind Waker. And I also don't know if anybody's just like, man, I got Phantom Hourglass. Like, I should check out that Wind Waker game because I've never played it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think in a way it does stand on its own, but somebody made a good point in the comments is that it does spoil like the Wind Waker, the fact that Tetra, Zelda, you know, if you hadn't played Wind Waker, you wouldn't know that. And then all of a sudden now you do. So, I mean,
I think that's okay. I mean, it is a direct sequel, right? Like,
yeah, to me, like, I would want a game to be able to stand on its own. But when I consider direct sequels, I don't necessarily always want it to be able to stand on its own. I want to have been able to play the game and then want the second game to be enjoyable because I played the first game. But in a way, I think in its own bubble, let's put it like that. If it's in its own bubble, I think Phantom Hourglass is okay. It's enjoyable.
I think what you said is really smart, because that really affects like the next entry. Because like in a lot of ways, I don't think A Link Between Worlds stands on its own. But I kind of don't think that it wants to necessarily either. Like, I think it wants you to have played A Link Between Worlds, A Link to the Past, to really get the most enjoyment out of A Link Between Worlds. And I think if you do, that's how you do get the most enjoyment out of Link Between Worlds. I still do think that it stands on its own, because I think in a lot of ways this is a better game than A Link to the Past. So I'm going to say yes, but in some ways, if you were to tell me no, I could understand why.
I feel like I disagree with you. I feel like you could play either of those games and they don't need to be connected in any way. That's just how I feel about them. And I know, like...
Well, that's kind of what I'm saying. It does stand on its own.
Yeah. A little bit. Yeah, it does. I would say yes, that it does. Because, like, I feel like you could play either or and it doesn't matter. It wouldn't take away from your experience either way.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's a million-dollar question. Tears of the Kingdom. You know, I probably do feel like it stands on its own, for better and worse, because, like, there's no continuity to the last game, so, like, that's good. And certainly, if you've played Tears of the Kingdom, you probably aren't in a hurry to play Breath of the Wild, because you basically have played Breath of the Wild, but the souped-up version. So in that kind of sense, like, it probably does stand on its own. It's weird, because, like, I feel like it's a sequel that you're actually worse off for playing the first game for, you know?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. For me, this is really hard because, again, I want the experience of the sequel to be enjoyable because I played the first game. And it's hard for it to be because of the lack of continuity. However, I feel like they tried so hard to make it stand on its own, like make it feel like you don't have to play Breath of the Wild in order to play Tears of the Kingdom, that it suffers. So then, therefore, it like... because they tried to make it stand on its own, it doesn't to me. Because, like, you have all these returning characters and they're trying to make their stories, like, be unique to Tears of the Kingdom. But if you don't really understand them from Breath of the Wild, then it kind of, like, takes away from that experience. So I don't know if I'm actually making sense. Like, they tried so hard to separate it, but it's still connected. So why not just keep it connected?
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's, like, the harder that you try to keep them separate, the more you're just like, the more you notice that. You
can tell that it's not, that it should be more connected.
Yeah, it's an odd case. Like, I wouldn't say that you're worse off for playing Majora's Mask after, like, you know what I mean? Like, you can play Majora's Mask, you play Ocarina of Time, and in totally either way, and you're going to be fine. You're probably going to play Phantom Hourglass if you've already played Wind Waker first, and that's not going to impact your enjoyment of Wind Waker. It's just going to be maybe like a fun sequel at best, maybe not your favorite Zelda game at worst. I think that with A Link Between Worlds and A Link to the Past, you can play almost either of them and be like, wow, this is amazing, and like this is like a remake but different, but not, but like it's a fun in between. Where I think Tears of the Kingdom is the only one that I would say, if you've played that game, you're like, you probably think Breath of the Wild is worse. Or maybe I'm just speaking from my own experience, but, like, to me, playing Tears of the Kingdom made me think less of Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom at the same time.
I guess I could, I would say, like, I don't know if I really feel that way. I think it's like the continuity that really bugs me, as I've said a million times on the show. So, like, but if I take that out, if I take that aspect out, I think it does stand really well on its own because it has such fun gimmicks. It has such fun, like, you could play either or, and some of the stuff is so similar, like you were saying, it feels such the same that you could experience either or and still have a really good time, I think. So I would say, like, without my gripes about the continuity, it stands on its own okay.
Yeah. Well, there it is. That's our analysis of all the direct sequel. We use that term loosely, by the way, direct sequels in the Zelda series.
Oh my God, people are going to be so mad at us.
I can hear it already. But you know what? Long hair,
we do what we
don't
want.
Care.
This is our show.
That's right. Go to hell, Corey, wherever you are. All right. Well, let us know what you think, because I'm really curious. And again, we kind of decided to do this topic on a little bit of a whim. So we just thought it was interesting to compare, you know, maybe not to all the direct sequels, but at least like some pretty clear direct sequels in the series, or like games that clearly were taking the first game as inspiration for their kind of world and gimmick and what have you. So let us know what you think, if we're off the mark, if we are onto something here, and maybe if there's anything that we missed or skipped over, how you know, how you would weigh that that into your, I guess, rankings or criteria or pillars of your own. That being said, that's it. We're gonna get out of here. That's gonna do it for us for this week. So you know what? Let us know what you think. You give us a shout over on Discord. You can join the fun. We're chatting all the time over there, and not only us, but tons of people. So lots of cool stuff going on over on Discord. Just join Zelda Dungeons Discord there, and you can get in on the action there. You can let us know over on socials as well. We are at the ZeldaCast, at Spateri316, and at Allison Aletha. Wherever you get your podcasts, like, subscribe, rate, recommend, review, all that good stuff. I was reading the reviews last week, so I know I don't do it enough, but man, thank you to everybody that that takes time to do that. It's really awesome, and I appreciated all of the kind words, and even the non-kind words. Hey, you still took time to leave us a review, so that's great. Thank you for that. You know, you got that Zelda fan in your life? Tell them where they can get their weekly Zelda fix. We have a Patreon if you are dying for more ZeldaCast news and stuff and shows. I just did actually a cool little AMA where it was about an hour, 20 minutes or so. We talked podcasting, we talked Zelda, we talked ideas and stuff. It was a really fun show. I had a really good time doing it. So head on over to patreon.com/SPNet and you can check that out. And I think that's it. I think that's all. And that means that we are going to get out of here. But we will be back next week. Same time, same channel. Until then, everybody, take care.